Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for being with us here on the program. I say this every time, and I do mean it. It is really a pleasure to have you with us to share these opportunities to explore the world that our guests have to offer. And occasionally we go into my world. Yes, I know. I am doing my utmost to learn the lesson of 51%. 50 plus 1%, shall we say, to the guest. And yet the guest draws out of me questions that the universe is asking. So just bear with me in that regard. My special guest today, and we'll get to preliminaries shortly. My special guest today is going to talk to us about a trip that she took down to Guatemala, a very special place, sacred place. And her name is Patty DeDominick, and I want to thank you so much for being with us here on the program. This is going to be very interesting because I haven't been to Guatemala. Matter of fact, the closest I've been was a Mexican Riviera cruise back in 1993. So I know things have changed, but thank you for being with us.
Well, Latin America is a really special place. And nowadays, it's wonderful to go there, meet the people, see the reality of their life. They're very happy lives, many in the country, some in the city. So I was in Lake Atitlan, which is a magical, mystical place in the center of Guatemala.
And there are a lot of these, as you described, the magical and sacred places around the world that we're starting to learn more about. I know that for myself, I went on a second cruise to the Western Caribbean, and we went to the Tulum ruins, which was very extraordinary. Again, this was back in the mid-90s, so I know things have changed a little, but it's just fascinating to me as to what we are finding out and what the ancient civilizations used to do in terms of, shall we say, their magic. I've interviewed a member of the local indigenous Chumash tribe, and I that was kind of the question I asked us. Talk to us about your magic, the magic of the Chumash. So you went on this journey, and this is part of what we'll talk about, as well as some of the other elements that you have listed at dedominick.com. That's DEDOMINIC.com. We'll be linked to that website. You're a chief coach and author. I almost said chef, but it's not chef. You have been in Los Angeles. You've been the Los Angeles Journal CEO in 2006, which is when we moved here to California from Arizona. You founded PDQ Careers. We'll find out about that as well. Ooh, when I got into the business of broadcasting in 1979, I was going to say something. I will keep that to myself. President as well, emeritus of the National Association of Women Business Owners, which seems to be growing, I think, exponentially, and I think that's a wonderful thing, as well as founder of the Santa Barbara International Women's Festival. So there's sort of a local connection there. You've been quite busy, as a matter of fact, in your life, in your career, and so forth. And what is it about these sacred sites, if you will, or locations that intrigues you so, that draws you in?
Well, as a 25-year resident of Santa Barbara, you know how we love our nature, right? Mm-hmm. And Richard, you mentioned the Chumash, and I've done a little bit of studying of some of the native cultures or indigenous people all around the world. And I find that there seems to be some basic philosophical differences between us Westerners and those people who have come from the earth around the world. And I read it just recently, and it's like their philosophy is, we have an obligation to Mother Earth. Okay. As opposed to some of us Westerners who say we have rights, our country has obligations to us, right? Or our land has obligations to us. Mm-hmm. So I definitely appreciate the beauty of our planet, of the country, of water, of the ocean. And I really appreciate what's natural remedies have been derived from millions of years, hundreds of thousands of years of people. So those are some of the things that draw me to it.
Well, I quote this often when talking about this subject of the land and so forth, nature. And that is that there's a wonderful line in an Irish song by Mary Black that basically says, and again, I understand people's, if you will, affinity towards owning property on a material human level. But from the natural world, the line is, you don't own the land. The land owns you. Mm-hmm. And I think about that in terms of even owning a home versus, say, renting. Now, I've owned a couple of homes and I have rented apartments as well as the place we're living now, we rent. You gotta, in a manner of speaking, I'll put it this in this context, you gotta pay no matter where you live. And even, this may sound strange, even if you're houseless, you pay. You know, there's a price. There's an exchange. It's a universal principle.
Right.
Now, what is it about shamanism that intrigues you so?
Well, it's not so much shamanism that intrigues me, although I do have a deep respect for spirituality. And I know some fabulous shamans also. And I mentioned that I went to Lake Atitlan in Guatemala. And the reason I did that is because one of my business coaching clients, a medical doctor by the name of Cesar Lara, he had his journey as a healer begin when he was young, and he went to medical school, trained in the United States, but he had been born in Guatemala. And so he always had a reverence for the land and the people and the culture and the forest garden there in any of Central America. Actually, it's all over the world, but the forest garden that he saw in his home country of Guatemala. Mm-hmm. So as he was building his business, his Western medical practice build business, he often told me about his dream to become a shaman and to be able to help people heal with the normal plant matter and the fire ceremonies and the healing of water and the healing of oils and essential oils and fragrances as well. So all of these things are part of us, and we're all made out of minerals as the earth is. And so that's why I wanted to study. And that's why I went to Lake Atitlan, because Dr. Lara opened a healing center and he did his very first week-long retreat in Guatemala this year in 2024.
Tell us about him, will you please?
Well, he is a shaman now, and he's still a medical doctor. He happens to be located in Florida at the moment. His journey as a healer really began a very distinct recollection as a child, he told me, and it's also on his website at Fire and Stone Shamanic Healing Center. He wanted to work towards curing the root of diseases rather than disease management. He furthers his exploration of ancient wisdom, and he had shamans and mentors. Energy medicine is what he calls it, and it is the way of shamans. Now, he received training from people who do this, and his rites as a shaman came from the Incan shamans, the guardian of the wisdom of the Andes. There's more detail on it. I'm not an expert on that, but I admire the fact that he wanted to help deal with spirituality, and the body can heal itself. So we wanted to help the body heal itself.
Well, there's an interesting twist, because we're not told that, you know, and the fact of the matter is, as I have discovered over the years, we don't need a lot of the, well, we don't need really any of the pharmaceutical companies that we generate and create our own. We have our own pharmacy built right in.
But yes, we do.
The question is, are we putting into that pharmacy the right elements for the body to generate those, we'll call them pharmaceuticals in this case.
Right, right. The body is a wonderful, miraculous healing machine, but the toxins that we live with every day, just things like air pollution, water pollution, air fresheners, you know, things, artificial fragrances, plastics, any other kinds of toxins that we're not really even aware of, you know, that we kind of took for granted as young kids, paint with lead in it, you know, all of these things that we do to our body that inhibits its natural ability to heal itself.
Yeah. And it certainly can. I'm a prime example thereof. Now, if I were to break my arm, I certainly would want someone who has the knowledge to help to reset it properly so that it heals properly. But once it's reset, then my body takes over and starts to re-knit that split, you know, to make it whole again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fascinating. It really is. And there's an element here that I just want to throw in. It's called a placebo effect. And there was a piece I saw on, I think it was 60 Minutes, where they did a whole segment on placebos. And the fascinating thing was, in this particular study, when they used the placebo on, let's say, group B, they told group B they were being given a placebo, and it still worked. That was the amazing thing. You know, it's one thing to tell someone, okay, we're giving you this medication that's going to help you, and it's just a sugar pill. But it's another thing when you tell them, we're giving you this pill to do and it's just a sugar pill. And yet it still accomplishes the same thing. It's just, to me, medicine is heading in a direction that we just don't fully understand. And I sometimes wonder if maybe that's the case, as much as medicine has brought all of us to where we are. I mean, I'm a product of genetics in that I was born legally blind, but it wasn't until I was 36 that I had a lens implant, and now I'm driving.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, and then there's another element too that I find fascinating, Patty. Even as the body grows, its chemistry is changing. You and I are prime examples of that in terms of, and again, I am not going to ask, but I'm 64. And when I was in my early mid 50s, I was diagnosed with hypertension. And then a few years ago, though I had been over the years prior, diagnosed with pre-diabetes. And then I would slip back away from that. And then I would be close to that line again. And then I was diagnosed with type 2. And I got rid of it in a month and a half.
How did you do that? Did you change your diet? Change your exercise?
First thing I did was I got rid of sodas.
Ah.
Now it's because of the fizz. So I actually found a non-sweetened replacement. And I was taking the medication at first, but I was also monitoring. And as I'm watching the numbers go down, I'm going, I'm going to cut back on the medication and monitor. And it kept going down. So when the doctor told me about 7 or 8 months later, you know, why don't you cut down to one? I stopped altogether, but continued to monitor.
Uh-huh.
And it stayed down until March of 2023, when I lost my father. It spiked up to nearly 600.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I'm going, but I didn't change anything. And then I start doing some research, to the consternation of one physician that I saw, who says, oh, no. Stress cannot affect the blood sugar.
Oh, please. Well,
that's not what I was reading, that it can.
Right. Of course it can. Right.
Maybe not directly, but the stress affects the hormones that affect this. It's a chain reaction.
That cortisol. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Absolutely. So, but what's interesting is throughout all of this, no more hypertension. And I've been monitoring it too. And I'm not taking any meds for it.
Congratulations. You've tapped into the ability. Right. That's right. So that's quite a story.
Yeah. The pharmaceutical department, shall we say, it changes as we get older, as the body gets older, I should say. But how do we, and I do want to get back to your experiences at the lake, but how do we, from your experience, especially when it comes to needing, quite honestly, your full faculties to run a business, even if it's just you? For example, when I went through my first divorce, they tried to get me to put a price on my business. And I said, zero. There is no value. It's me. I'm the business because I do the work. The equipment, it doesn't matter what the equipment is. And of course, they pushed and pushed and pushed. All right, 10 grand. But that's only if I was to sell everything, and I'd be lucky to get three, maybe. Anyway, but you kind of need all your faculties to run a business, whether it's you or you have one or 100 or even 1,000 employees. Or I prefer to refer to them as coworkers, because if it weren't for them, all of these corporations wouldn't even exist. It is the people, unfortunately, at the bottom of the pyramid, who are the ones that actually generate the revenue that the corporations make. And we won't go down that road, but faculties, brain power, stamina, physical, mental, emotional, because you're going to be dealing with a lot of stuff. Again, even if it is just you, I shared with you before we started about my 1 year experience with my own business. And I promised myself that if I ever started the business again, I would make sure to have an infrastructure, i.e. either a CPA or an accountant, that would make sure that the whole tax thing was taken care of, you know, so I didn't have to worry about it at the end of the year. Can you share with us, as far as your mentoring and leadership skills, your training that you provide to entrepreneurs and so forth, I know you're not a trained shaman by any means, but you have an awareness of, but what about that, this whole aspect we've just been talking about in terms of the body healing itself, taking care of itself, and running a business?
Well, there are some interesting similarities in that you can either get yourself physically, health-wise, on the wrong track by abusing your body, exposing yourself to toxins and unnecessary stress, or there's also other ways that you can make your body healthier, right? So the right input. And it's the exact same thing with companies. And I do agree with you, Richard, that you need good people to grow a business, but you can either toxify it by not having clear values, not having a clear vision, not having clear roles and responsibilities, or you can cleanse it and purify it by giving people the vision, the big picture, the North Star, the values of the business, and the things that are important, your commitment to customer service or purity or loyalty to customers. All of those things, I think, are important. And business owners have the opportunity to do that. I work with one business owner who wanted to grow his construction company. He and a brother were doing it, and they had so much demand on their time. They were running around almost like chickens with head cuts off, you know, because they just couldn't figure out, answer these calls, go here. They didn't want to say no to any business. And so one of the things that I was able to do with them is sit down with them, talk about their vision, talk about what was really important to them, their family values, their business values, and the vision for the future. And so we made a few strategic hires. They made a few strategic hires, got the right financial person in place, got the right project managers in place, had people inside to be able to answer the phones, do the billing. And also the people inside were trained what the ideal customer looked like and when to say no and when to say yes, booking jobs and other things. And it was so thrilling because just 2 years later, they hit 20 million. So to see them grow four times, 400% in 2 years was pretty exciting accomplishment. Made some great careers. The partners were able to make plenty of money. They bought their own building. It's beautiful. And their construction business carries on and continues on with two major divisions, commercial as well as residential.
I know that there's going to come a point when I'm going to want to start a business again. And I'm going to want to do it right. I'm going to want to take the correct steps to go in the right direction. But I'm not looking at longevity beyond me. Because what I do is it's me. If I were making a product or providing a service that could be, so to speak, handed down or sold and signed over to someone else, great, but that's not what I do. But I have a feeling it probably doesn't make any difference. What are some of the, obviously one of them, obviously, as you've just described, is you need to set goals. What is it that you want to achieve in, what is it? You start out a year, 5 years, 10 years, what have you. Do you find that a lot of people that you work with who don't have a business but would like to start one, they're interested in entrepreneurialism, they haven't really thought about that?
Most people think about it quite a bit, but they may not be focusing their sights on a particular industry. Some of them are just saying, hey, I don't like this job or I don't like my career and I want to have my own business, but I don't know what it is. And so they need to go about and research and perhaps even change jobs so that they can work in the industry that they would eventually like to own a business in. Mm-hmm. And Richard, you know, there are certain celebrities who are well known and they are their own product. You know, mm-hmm. You think about it. Well, let me just go from historical somebody everybody knows, right? Let's say Frank Sinatra, right? So he is the product, but he had an enterprise. So Michael Jackson is another person here as a Santa Barbara guy, right? So his business is so much bigger now, actually, after he has passed away, but all of the enterprises associated with the rights to his music and his videos and his real estate and the other things that he had. So you can be a one-man band, but when you stop playing or if something happens to you, then your business does become extinguished. But if you build systems and you put out a trail for other people to help you grow the infrastructure of your business, then you have a business that has a good chance of lasting long past you. And so I would hate to see somebody start a business, just work their butt off for 5 or 10 years and say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to close the doors. But you probably have built an asset that with a little bit of extra strategy and then working that plan could be sold. So maybe you say, well, I'm tired of working. I don't really want to do that. But if you think about it a year or two or three before you want to sell or before you want to retire, then you are in a position to easily put small stepping stones into place. You don't have to build the Great Wall of China. You can build some small stepping stones and then you and your team work that plan.
I know that for me, I would not occupy very much space. And I know that a brick and mortar is a big deal, but we had a big change over the last few years. A lot of people don't want to work from the site, so to speak. They want to work remotely. I would like to work remotely because it would give me an opportunity to maybe do some traveling. I mean, I even came up with a scenario. I won't go into it now, but what about how our workforce has changed? Not so much the workforce, but the way in which we work and the types of jobs that are available.
Right. I mean, 5 years ago, people weren't talking about artificial intelligence every day. But today, there's whole new high-paying occupations, artificial intelligence engineers, leveragers, affiliates, associates, all sorts of platforms that are out there that make our life easier or can make our life easier. I had another client who had been in business for 40 years, and his young son dropped out of college. And so they gave the son a job, just trying to help him find his passion. And the son was kind of into it or not into it. But you know what happened then? He got a mentor about selling stuff on Amazon and ended up selling millions and millions and millions of air filtration systems during COVID. So he found his passion, which was being opportunistic and diving into a market and being able to provide the market with some solutions that it needed. And he was more resourceful and definitely aggressive in going after that market and learning how to be an Amazon seller or all the other places that he sold besides Amazon.
I find that this aspect of having a business, what was it? My father said to me, says, find something you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like me. Now, I've shared this before. My father didn't stay stuck. He did go back to junior college. He got his computer programming degree and he moved on to do other things. I have been fortunate as of 1979, when I was 19 years old, I got into this business. But I was always interested in audio and video. I actually worked at the junior college that he went to. I worked down in the basement of the library where they had all of the audio video equipment that they would take out to the different classrooms, film projectors and overhead projectors and so on and so forth. And then I got a job August 29th of 79 at a radio reading service for the blind and visually impaired. And I've been in it ever since. And I don't consider it a job. As the phrase goes, if you love what you do, you will never work a day in your life.
I agree with that. Sure.
But there are, and I remember in 2008-09 when I guess thousands of people were laid off due to the economic downturn.
That's right. 2007 began a disastrous year, right? Yeah.
Well, the first thought that came to mind was, being as compassionate about this as I can, I wonder how many of those people hated their jobs. And the universe was basically telling them, you need to be doing something else. Because this is not, maybe this has been passed down from one generation to the next, but it's time for you to choose your goals, your vocation, your life's purpose. Is that part of the training that you go through as well? Or are all of the people that come to you already set on their vocation, if you will? I'm not working another day in my life because I'm doing this.
When I built my staffing company and I ran that for 27 years, we did a lot of career counseling, listened to people, what they loved about their career or their job and what they didn't like and what they yearned for, and then tried to help them find that, of course, helping them increase their pay as well. And I sold that business in 2006, just the year before that major recession, by the way.
It's on now.
Yeah. So I think that a lot of people do make changes. When you and I were growing up, maybe people thought, oh, they would have one career and keep mm-hmm. that career, or our parents did, but that's not the case of ourselves or our children. In fact, my granddaughter told me that she needs to keep her job because she doesn't want to leave any job in less than 12 months. So that's kind of the, that's a, for the younger people today, that's a sign of longevity if you've stayed at a job for a year, which of course was just the beginning ante for us when we were starting. But I love what you told me about how medicine helped you with your lens transplants, right? I mean, we can, you could go in the forest garden all you want, but that wasn't going to bring your eyesight back, but modern medicine. So the combination of you being a person who believed that you could get better and then willing to go through the time and effort to find the resources to help you get better, I think is a great example. Today, in our business coaching practice, we work with entrepreneurs who already run multi-million dollar businesses. And so we help them organize their team for optimum performance, their pricing structure for optimum profitability, but comprehensive service to customers, and also their business to help them actualize their life values, not just, I love working with purpose-driven or mission-driven entrepreneurs, that people who are gonna change the world. And so, for example, maybe you decide that you are gonna have a reading for the blind business. And so perhaps you would recruit other readers and then you would get other customers to do that. Or you might have one-on-one relationships with certain people who have computer systems or who have supportive devices to assist them in their life. I have a couple of friends who at over 50 years old lost their eyesight. So they're still quite active today, even on the computer with assisted learning devices and other things. So it's amazing what can be done with resources.
Absolutely. And I do find it interesting that there are those who really are challenged by the changes. The one constant in the universe is change. Things are never going to go back to the way they were. I don't care how far back you go in time.
Right.
It's not going to happen. And I'm wondering if there is an issue in that regard in terms of teaching or mentoring through the work that you do, teaching and mentoring people to learn how to not only accept, but adapt to and adjust and modify their thinking. Because I have been, as I said, since 1979 in this business, and I have seen untold changes, not just in the various recording platforms. I mean, I remember reel to reel and then cassette and then CD, then file transfer and so forth, and all of that. And that's kind of what it still is today, is file transfer, but it's gotten faster and faster and faster. And now I'm doing video editing. That wasn't part of what I really wanted to do. And I'm still learning. And I'm always learning, even about audio.
Uh-huh.
How about that aspect in terms of, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. If you can't beat them, yeah, join them. Or maybe try to find an innovative way of doing things that it becomes your way. I mean, I've got all kinds of protocols I've set up that make my work fairly efficient. It's not perfect. Talk to us about this aspect of change.
You know, dealing with change, and in fact, dealing with change when things don't go your way can actually turn out so much better than you thought. You know, when something you perceive is horrible that happens, and then it causes you to change course. And because you changed course, you found new resources, new partners, new people, new opportunities. One of my favorite stories is the client that eventually grew and sold to LinkedIn for over $1 billion.
Oh, my. Wow.
Yeah. But when I met them, they were only $13 million a year, and they had a growth strategy. But we were thinking that our goal would be to do a $100 million valuation of that business. And when they were able to sell to LinkedIn for over $1 billion, it was just kind of mind-blowing. But that was a company called Lynda.com. Lynda wrote the very first book on how to build a website, or she built one of the early books on how to build a website for lay people. Devil. And that was a popular book, very successful. Her boyfriend was a programmer and computer nut, and he would do all of this complicated stuff. And he would say, well, what's wrong with you? Why can't you get this? She goes, well, I don't know. I need to use my teaching background and maybe also my father's film background, because she understood making movies, video, and all of the rest of that. So she began teaching people how to build websites, teaching them how to use Adobe Photoshop, other kinds of software for the computer. All that career wasn't available 50 years ago, right? I mean, movie making was available 50 years ago. Teaching was available. But this combination of her teaching people how to make websites, use software, and all the rest. And so that's one of the ways that they grew. But they grew by strategic alignment, by making a vision. And they were doing live classes in Ojai, California. And then the 9/11 came, and Linda told me that she had to stop offering the classes all the time because people just weren't getting on airplanes to travel. And those of you who've lived through the COVID epidemic and pandemic, you also know sometimes forces beyond your control require you to find ways to do business in different ways. So they had to start doing it on video. Linda made more recordings and videos. And then when they started providing this training, instead of live in person, it was over the internet. Now their market became millions of potential customers, not just hundreds of potential customers coming to live classes. So this is a good example of how times change. And now, Richard, there's so many different automation projects, and there's things that can make film editing so much easier today. The average person with an iPhone or a smartphone can do video editing, where, you know, it used to be you had to go to school for 2 years to learn to do video editing. So there are wonderful opportunities, but you have to reach out and grab them. And I do want to leave before we go, I want to have a special message also for your folks. I think if they haven't started a business, but they would like to, there's a wonderful organization that's part of the United States Small Business Administration called SCORE, score.org. And you can go online and you can get free business counseling. Or all across the country, there are chapters, and the chapters mostly still meet one-on-one with people. There's no charge for the counseling. They sometimes will put on low-cost workshops, but there's just a nominal charge if they provide a lunch or if they have to rent a meeting room or something. But it's a great place. And there are over 10,000 volunteers who are former business executives, entrepreneurs, and including myself. I was a volunteer for SCORE for over 20 years.
I've heard of SCORE, a very, very interesting program. And of course, people can certainly find out more about that and you through your website, dedominic.com, as we continue talking with Patty DeDominic here on Tell Me Your Story. I want to ask you about leadership, because from, I'm going to say from the media, social and otherwise, we are getting a lot of different examples of leadership. Some, and again, this is based upon the social and other media sources, that are not the norm. And the only reason why it seems like it's the norm is because people buy into and they're inundated by the social and other media sources, when in fact, I think that's the minority. And at the same time, I wanted to touch upon especially leadership qualities in personal behavior, especially when it deals with dealing with, let's say, your coworkers, your employees, and so on and so forth. The examples that are inundating us are ones that I look at and say, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how not to be. Because that's not how I was raised. I tell you what, if I behaved the way some of these leaders, so-called leaders, I'll call them, in whatever sector you want to bring up, my mother would either, I would have a serious timeout, or she'd be slapping my face for some of the verbiage that comes out of the mouths of some of these leaders. I wonder sometimes how it is that these individuals gain the power that they do, the control, the, you know, whatever it is, the leadership positions, because I'm a firm believer in karma. And eventually your house of cards is going to fall down because you can't keep treating people the way that you treat them verbally, emotionally, and mentally, let alone physically, and expect there not to be repercussions for you as the leader, the CEO, whatever the position is. Talk to us about that dynamic.
Right. I think one of the most important qualities today for all of us as citizens is to understand that we need to be the leader of our own family, our own decision making. I choose, as we have different political leaders, I choose to be curious and to learn about what they can bring to us rather than be fearful. I don't believe in this horrible, divisive undercutting of everybody or anybody in authority so they can pull them down. I mean, I think it's the old mentality of this survivor wins. And what we know now is that it takes cooperation, and it definitely takes a whole community to make a good place for your family, to make schools, to make businesses. So number one quality of leadership would be resilience, having the vision, having the ability to communicate that vision, and to help solicit input and get a strategy with people and then build a consensus around it. It's a little bit easier to do in your own corporation because you employ these people and they basically do, you know, what you ask them to do or what their job description is. Mm-hmm. We can't control all these other people. We can't control the craziness that's going on in some cities or some countries right now, but we can control mostly ourselves. Yeah. So I think it has to start there. And I think we need to reach out and remember that kindness, small acts of kindness, add up. And we can be either part of the problem or we can be part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the things that leaders do, is they think about, how can I help create a solution so that it's not a continuing problem?
I did an interview some time ago regarding the subject of narcissism, for example, psychopaths. Mm. And one of the things that came out of that interview for me was that my guest basically stated that, believe it or not, as bad as psychopaths might seem to be, there is much that we can learn from them. The reason being that though the ends does not necessarily justify the means, narcissists or psychopaths, they get things done. And like I said, the ends don't necessarily justify the means, but that was one of the elements that my guest talked about in that regard, and that, you know, just dismiss them because they're, you know, you think they're crazy, or, you know, they're only out for themselves. Well, that may be true, but that doesn't mean that we cannot learn from them. And not just what I said earlier, thank you, teacher, for teaching me how not to be.
Right.
But maybe there are some small little elements of that individual's persona or way of doing things that I could incorporate without crossing the line of my own personal ethics and values.
Right. And I think that's the key there. You have to decide for yourself who you are and who you're going to be. And you don't necessarily cave to somebody. And yeah, some of these narcissists and sociopaths, criminal minds, neurotic people, they are very persuasive. They can sway some public opinion. And I think that's where it becomes even more important for all of us citizens to continue to educate ourselves, and then also to speak up when we know that there's obvious untruth, and also to advocate for and encourage a free media, freedom of speech. I say it's okay that people say things or use certain language if they want to, but I don't have to listen to it. Mm. But there's one thing that I think that's really important now. that is the social media issue regarding shaming and all of that. And one of my friends was telling me about her son recently. He wanted to ask a girl to prom. He's had a crush on this girl for several years, and he wanted to ask her to the prom, but he was worried. And so the mom said to the son, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? And she could say no. And he goes, no, that's not the worst thing that could happen. She could take my text and she could post it on social media. She could make a meme out of it. She could do this. She could do that. She could shame me online. And I'm like, oh my God. Right. Absolutely. That's kind of sad. So she developed a strategy for that young man. It was, well, go ask the young lady in person. Don't make a written record of it. Don't make a video of it. Mm-hmm. Just go and, you know, ask her and see, because you do have to kind of risk to get reserved. But well, I think it's important that parents instill these values in their children and that they stop it when they see that kind of behavior, because that can be very damaging to a young person who doesn't necessarily hasn't developed a thicker skin yet that most adults have to survive.
Another element too of this whole leadership aspect, and on this day you and I are conversing, I have had two or three faux pas, and the day is only half over. Now, someone emailed me in regards to one of them, not being critical. They weren't being critical, but they said, don't worry about it. Mercury is in retrograde. Well, if we want to use astrology, we talk about it on this program all the time. But if you want to use that and say, okay, Mercury's in retrograde, and that's why things are going haywire and you're having these challenges, it's all good. Just take a breath, pick up, and move forward. And I thought, okay, first of all, thank you for your understanding and your patience, because the faux pas affected this person who texted me. Here's where I made a mistake. In other words, I owned it. I told them this is what I didn't do, and that's why the faux pas. And then I made the faux pas for a second time within 2 hours. And I had to send another text. And I said, here it is. Okay. And in all caps, I said, I'm sorry, exclamation point. Now, I know that this person isn't going to do, you know, this girl might have done. And that's another thing too, is when you think about it, if you're afraid that this person is going to turn what you put up on social media into something, maybe this person isn't someone you really want to associate with. Or maybe, I know you haven't asked this person out in this context of your, what you've shared. Do it verbally, do it face to face, that kind of thing. And that type of thing. Because you need to know who this person is. You need to know their character. It seems to me that there's a certain lack of personal responsibility amongst our leaders. And I'll use not specific cases in point, but in general, a case in point, politicians. Over the years, as I have seen politicians called out on different things, the ones who owned the mistake, the story went away. The ones who refused to own it, the story went on and on and on until they were almost quite literally forced. Maybe not to own it, but to maybe give up their position. And I have to give, for example, one politician in particular, Al Franken. Apparently, there was an allegation, an accusation. He said it wasn't intended that way. However, this person took it that way. I wish to sincerely apologize. And the man stepped down from his seat in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's character.
Right.
Do you think there is there a lack of character in our world today as far as our leaders? And let me back that down to in our country. Let's not go globally here. But do you think that there is a lack of accountability in that regard? Or is that the minority and we're just getting inundated?
Well, there's so much going on. certainly there are what parallel universes, right? There's the virtual community, then there's your social community, then there's your church community and your office community and your relationship, all the rest of these. So everybody has the ability to kind of skip out on one particular community that they were involved in and go get involved in something else. But I do agree with you that if one takes responsibility for the faux pas or the screw ups that we have, that it's a little bit easier to get past it. And I know what you're saying about politicians. They generally have an agenda, very specific agenda that they ran on, a platform, and that they want to get accomplished. And many people, especially congressional people, find that being a congressperson isn't all that they thought it was going to be, that so much has to do with partisan politics and fundraising and supporting your fellow candidates, that they need to keep making sure they have those majorities to control the votes to get their agendas done. So I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But I think we need to kind of make a decision about there are certain things that we can change and certain things that we can't. And so I know that successful business owners look for ways to solve problems for their customers and to control those things that they can. Mm-hmm. They pay their taxes. They hire people in hopes to get great productivity. If they don't, they terminate those people. Maybe they hire again, or they get a vendor or a contractor or somebody else to do it for them. So I think what I'd like to summarize really is leadership is up to us, and we need to try to be the example, you know, to quote Gandhi, right? Be the change that you wish to see in the world. So that's the philosophy that I have. And I try to help my clients be successful in business. If they have a mission-driven business and they want to grow that business so it impacts more customers, more careers, changes their life, enables them to educate their family or help as a philanthropist. These things are very rewarding to me. And I think that I would wish that for everybody, that they'd have a chance to do things that they love and to make a difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. Patty DeDominick is my guest. DeDominick.com is the website. We hope that you will go there to find out more about the work that she not only does, but offers opportunities to help you in your leadership position, if that's what you're all about, or maybe you're looking for a mentor. And I got to tell you, after this interview, I wouldn't mind having you as my mentor to kick me in the pants sometimes, to call me on my stuff, but also to encourage and support me in my vision of what I like. Speaking of visions, I remember when Steve Jobs certainly passed, when he passed away, and I remember the conversations prior to his passing about his vision, for example, for the company Apple. And I thought when he passed away, I thought that company's going to sink, because that was Steve Jobs' vision. It was nobody else's. However, he apparently was able to pass at least a part of that vision on to others. And that, to me, is incredible leadership and mentorship, that he obviously wanted to see the company continue. And I was really impressed by one factor, and this is maybe played into this, I don't know, I would have to say it probably did. Do you know what one book Steve Jobs had? I believe it was in Audible, if not like Kindle, on his phone. These were the reports that he only had one book.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Paramahansa Yogananda's Autobiography of a Yogi, which is my metaphysical primer.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Great.
And I thought, wow. Now, I am not an Apple person. Okay. I've been working with PCs and Windows and all of that stuff since 1994 or 95, whenever it was that I got my first Windows 3.1, which I installed 500 times at least. Anyway, and I like it. So I'm thinking, unless they go out of business and stop producing it, I'm sticking with what works for me. But that really impressed me, that the company's doing great. As a matter of fact, if they're not already outpacing their iPhones, they're outpacing Samsung, which I also have a Samsung phone. Then that's fine. And if that's what you choose, you know, I like have my preferences, you have yours. I want to jump back a little bit because we didn't really touch upon it as much as I would like to, and I would love to have you give us a little bit of a travel log. We're going back to the lake.
Okay.
And we're not going fishing. We're not going to go fishing. Although I don't know if the fishing is any good in that lake. Tell me about your journey and how it changed you.
Well, it was really special for many reasons. Being able to see Dr. Cesar Lara realize his dream of a healing center in Lake Atitlan in his birth country of Guatemala was very, very special. I get personally invested in the success and happiness of my clients. So that having him say to me about 2 years ago, well, I want to have a healing center in Guatemala, and then me pushing him a little bit on it and saying, okay, what's the plan? How are you going to do that? First, he opened his fire and stone shamanic healing center in Florida near his offices in one of his other medical offices. And then he went back and he got a partner. He teamed up with a woman by the name of Elise Free, and she produces travel, adventure, educational trips, and things like that. Before that, she was doing Egypt, and I think she still does Egypt, but she also decided that she wanted to add spirituality in a trip to Guatemala. The forest garden is so magnificent. Cacao forests grow there, and it's wonderful to see the people and the communities. It's primarily a Catholic country, very Christian, and so we were there before Easter week, and we got to watch all the processions and everything in the community, also of Antigua, which is used to be the capital of Guatemala. So it was great. But I tell you, Richard, I had a definitely had a challenge to get there. I invited my niece, who is 50 years old, and she wanted to experience something different. And I invited my granddaughter, who's 30 years old, to come along with me and experience the shamanic retreat. Both of them are not super religious, but they're spiritually minded, and they have a deep reverence for the earth and people and animals and all living things. And so they were excited to do it. So one came from Santa Barbara, one came from Northern California, I came from Oregon. We all met up in San Francisco. We got on the plane in San Francisco, got to Houston, and then we were getting ready to get on the plane to go to Guatemala City, and I couldn't find my passport.
Uh-oh.
So, if you've gotten your passport renewed, like it takes months usually or weeks at minimum, right? So there I am. Oh my God, where is it? Where is it? Well, women do something when they're missing something. It's called ye olde purse stump. So I told the flight attendant as the plane had been loaded, and I said, "I'm on this plane. I can show you a copy of my passport, but I don't have my physical passport. And let me go over here. I'm going to dump my purse and see. And then I'm going to go to the restroom and see if I can find it." Anyway, long story short, all my girls are on the plane already. I'm texting them saying, "I'm having trouble. I can't find my passport." They will meet you in Guatemala City as you arrive at the airport. So stay on the plane. You go and stay on the plane. I went to the bar, to the bathroom, to the gate, to the this, went through my carry-on, went through my purse, no passport in sight. The plane left without me, and I went to the United Help Desk, and she said, "Here's the State Department. You have to call. You cannot go there without an appointment." We called right then and there. This was 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. We were able to get through. They have I think the State Department must have a 24-hour hotline. I'm not sure. And I was able to make an appointment for 7:30 the next morning. I whipped out my credit card. I rented a car. I went and got a hotel room. And at 7:15 next morning, I showed up at the State Department in Houston and applied for a new passport. Oh, by the way, at 11 o'clock at night, I'm at the pharmacy getting passport pictures, right? So meanwhile, we're on with Lost and Found, and they find my passport in San Francisco. So, excuse me. But I couldn't get there to do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't, and they wouldn't put my passport on the next plane out. So that morning I went to the passport, I pled my case, and they said, okay, I filled out all the paperwork, come back at 1 o'clock. I got my passport.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm waiting for the body to heal. Heal thyself.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I got the passport. I was on the plane 24 hours later. It all worked out. My granddaughter, my friend, my niece were all able to meet Dr. Lara without me. So that was wonderful. And they met Elise Free. She was there at the airport. She waited. She picked me up at the airport. And then we traveled a couple hours to Lake Atitlan. And then when you get to the city, you have to get on a little shore boat. It's kind of like Uber on the lake. And you get a little shore boat. You throw your luggage on there. They put it on top. They load about 30 people in these little boats. And then I got to the villa that Dr. Lara had had for our shamanic retreat. It was wonderful. We had a lot of meditation. We had some singing. We had a fire ceremony and the full moon. We had some demonstrations of cacao, how they take the cacao bean and how they roast it and preserve it, and then how they make chocolate out of it. That was really great. We had a wonderful afternoon with a couple of musicians walking through the cacao forest and then laying out. We brought mats and we laid out in the cacao forest. It was heavenly. It was us communing with nature, and it was beautiful.
What was your inner life like before this experience, and how did that change? Because we talk here on this program about encouraging people to go within and listen to that still small voice during what I have called since 2019. It was first the year of perfect vision, 2020, and now the decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, where we want people to go within and listen to that still small voice and get that encouragement and that guidance and that education and that inspiration and so forth. So how did that, you know, if it did, how did that change for you, you know, before and after that experience?
I don't know what the average income of the average Guatemalan is, but I know it's significantly less than the average American.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually survive and eat there on less than $10 a day. You can rent a villa for $1,000 a month. You can rent a small house for a couple hundred dollars a month. And the food there that we had was so good, so fresh, you know, fresh chicken and fresh vegetables and black beans. That's one of the wonderful signature dishes of Guatemala, plantains and other fruit. It was really great. So how have I changed? I think this time to bond with my granddaughter. I have five grandchildren, only one granddaughter, and my niece was very special. We were going through something important because my sister had just died a couple of months ago. So the reminder for me was, it doesn't take $100,000 a year or $1 million a year to be happy. There are plenty of Guatemalans that are beautiful people that are raising family out in the country that are happy. We have more conveniences than they do, but we also have a lot of different kinds of stresses than they do too. Quite a few of them have cell phones, but not everybody does. On the last day before we came home, we went up to see a volcano, and we climbed a couple of thousand feet on horseback, and we had a wonderful ride. It was really great. And the 73-year-old man who who owned the horses, was very nice. He didn't speak English, and I speak some Spanish, but not a lot. But it was really wonderful to see and see how proud he was of his horses and how we cared about his horses. We weren't just hopping on the horse and saying, giddy up, giddy up. We were really appreciating the animal and knowing that it was a climb in altitude. And I said, how do these horses do it, climbing up the altitude 7,000-8,000 feet? And he goes, well, they were born here, you know. So I think a special appreciation for differences is what I have now. And also a great and deep understanding that growing $100 million a year company is not the big goal that everybody has to have. Entrepreneurship isn't for everybody. Sometimes doing yoga or being a yoga instructor or meditating or being a wildlife expert or a scientist, these things are also wonderful careers and professions, may or may not be financially very lucrative, but there are other ways to have a beautiful life. And I think everybody should remember that they have a right to a beautiful life, but they also have an obligation to our country, to our community, to make the world a better place. I think that's a great place to end too, don't you, Richard?
I do. I do think so. And I want to thank you for giving us so much time here on the program, talking about so much of what's going on. And obviously, we want to help you and facilitate your body's healing process. So we will bring our conversation to a close here. I want to let our listeners know that we've been talking with Patty DeDominick. And DeDominick.com is the website, which we will be linked to. I do have to impose and say I do have three final questions I ask all of my guests, but you can keep the answers short as we wrap up this particular program. But I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m. That's our special edition of Tell Me Your Story. And Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m., we hope that you will tune into all 9 programs with 9 different topics, 9 different guests, 9 different conversations. We certainly hope that you will take an opportunity to tap into those, because we stream those live at richarddugan.com. We podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations. We are on YouTube, where you can watch these conversations. I hope you'll subscribe and select notification so that when a new conversation is posted, you'll be notified and you can tune into that conversation. We also ask that if you can support the work that we are doing financially, we certainly would appreciate that. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. And any amount is welcome. We'll take energetic support. When they do ask you who you're sending to whom you are sending the support, it's richard@richarddugan.com. That's the email address you want to put in, richard@richarddugan.com. And as I mentioned just a little bit ago, we also ask that during this, the decade of perfect vision, you take time to go within that quiet, peaceful, calm, still place and listen to that still, small voice. With all of that being said, 3 final questions for our guests that we ask every program. And the first of those 3 is, who is Patty DeDominick?
I'm a mom. I'm a human who loves the planet, loves the animals, loves nature, and I'm a business coach. Mm-hmm. I love helping companies grow.
What is it that gets you up in the morning?
The beauty of nature, my animals, my kids are all grown now. So that, and then usually around 10 o'clock every morning is about when I start and, during the week, and I am coaching business clients from about 10 to 5, 3 days a week.
And finally, what was your best day?
Oh, my best day. I think today is my best day because it's the only one that I can change. It's the only one that I can impact right now. I'm alive. I got to do this great interview with you, Richard, and I get to make a difference in the lives of my clients today. So thank you for asking. Those are great questions. And it's been a pleasure being one of your guests. Thank you, Richard.
Well, I thank you. And again, I thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I will see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.